technically, this is the final episode in the year of 2023.
Oh my goodness. From Head in the Office. It's been quite the year.
We'll be recording another one, I think, like the last day, the 31st or 30th or something.
And
like
you
that.
Know it'll drop for patrons, but
exactly. But the next episode of Head in the Office, if you're a Wednesday weenie, will be coming out in January of 2024.
January 3rd.
It'll be our award show, obviously. Make of sure course. You vote. The voting link will be available in the description of this episode. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I think we could do, I wouldn't call it a preview, but maybe just a little precursor or a little treat to build anticipation for all the reflecting we'll be doing in 2023.
We're not the only people who are going to be celebrating the year.
That's absolutely right.
We might as well celebrate it with someone who I respect and admire.
Mm-hmm. I've got a clip from Eric Adams, our favorite Republican Democrat. mayor of New York City, and he did an interview where he's reflecting on 2023, and I thought it was just a good way to prime us for the final episode our Wednesday weenies will be listening to in the year of 2023, and it's a good way to prime us for our award show that's happening next week.
That's right. That's
so
right.
We'll go ahead and
build
take
some
a
anticipation.
It's a very good clip. I'm excited. Here we go.
Mr. Mayor, we've come to the end of what was a very eventful 2023, right? So when you look at the totality of the year, if you had to describe it, and it's tough to do, in one word, what would that word be, and tell me why?
New York. This is a place where every day you wake up, you could experience everything from a plane crashing into our trade center to a person who's celebrating a new business that's open. This is a very, very complicated city, and that's why it's the greatest city on the globe.
He said New York's the greatest because we have 9/11 and new businesses. Why are these like the comparable things in his mind?
In one word, describe this year. New York. New York.
Yeah, he said describe this year's events in one word, New York. What does that mean?
New York, we got 9/11, we got Bodega.
Eric Adams is not known for making sense or stringing together coherent thoughts, but this is one of like the most egregious examples of I don't know what he's talking about.
That's like almost like a George W. type of mishap right there.
Yeah.
That's almost like a fool me once, you know?
Maybe this is like what cop brain does to you over a lifetime, you know? Because he was a cop at one point, right? Maybe this is just the logical conclusion.
New York.
Yeah, New York. I don't even, like, why would he bring up 9/11?
Man, I'm flabbergasted.
As if other cities don't have new business openings.
But other cities don't have 9/11.
So true. 9/11's an important part. It's a complicated city after all. That's what makes you the best on the globe. So as you look back on 2023, whatever city or town that you live in, reflect on the worst moments of your town.
That's right.
And maybe just like an average thing that happens like frequently. You know what I mean? I can't imagine what other cities will come up
with.
You
live in a small town, reflect on that one guy who did like a crazy murder, mm-hmm. and then also reflect on high school graduations.
Yeah. You know, we have new business openings. We also had a school shooting, but you know, it's, that's what makes us the greatest city on the planet. You know what I'm talking about? We had all of our industry leave.
That's right.
We also got new businesses.
You know, a couple years ago, all of our industry left. It left us devastated, but... We got some people coming back. You
That's
know what
right.
I'm saying?
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. We got a crumble cookie.
Thanks for Eric Adams for coming on the show. Let's get into the episode.
My favorite mayor.
Welcome back to Head in the Office, everybody. We've got quite the show planned for you today.
Sir.
We got a little update on Israel and Gaza, of course, as we do every single episode.
Yes.
But then we got to talk about, I would say, the biggest news of the week.
Big Daddy Trump.
Trump getting kicked off the ballot in Colorado. That's coming up this show.
Insane. And then, you know, we gotta round it off with catching up on some bad things that Texas did over the last couple months that we missed.
Mm-hmm.
Much like when we talked about that abortion case 2 weeks ago. And checking in with our favorite attorney general.
That's right. That's right. But I will remind you all, before we get into this episode, that the Hiddo Award Show is next week.
Yes, sir.
Airing at normal time, January 3rd, I believe.
Yeah.
Whatever the Wednesday is next week. It's in the post. You can
look
at it if you need to.
You understand.
And I will say, speaking of Texas, we have one category, worst state of 2023. Mm-hmm. Texas and Florida battling it out.
I think Texas might edge it out. You know, I wouldn't want to inject inject my bias into this discussion, but I think Texas might just edge Florida out this time.
But if you're listening to this post Wednesday, or I guess on Wednesday after when this is posted for everybody to see, go down in the description and make sure you vote. The voting form will be available.
You're morally obligated to vote in this instance.
We've had lots of people nominate different political actors, different states, different events that have happened. But if you're not creative enough, if you can't think of anything to nominate, then just go ahead and cast your vote. Make your voice
heard.
That's what
I'm saying. Go ahead and campaign for your favorites in the Discord as well.
That's right. Oh, that's right. Goodness. And then we'll announce the winners, and we'll have some other special stuff planned for next week. But we're looking forward to that. If you want to help the show out, a very easy way to do it and support what we do here is to go over to patreon.com/headintheofficepod.
Come on.
Give us a little end of the year gift.
A couple,
you know what I'm saying?
Couple bucks. You know what I mean?
And it's not really even a gift. It's more of a transaction because we give you early access to episodes.
You know, we provide a service here. we are essential workers. We provide an essential service for you enjoying your commute to work every day.
We have a very meticulous service delivery package.
We're
very focused on service delivery and providing.
You know, I don't like to call it a service or a product necessarily. I like to call it
the second coming of Christ, really.
The second coming of Christ and a brand experience, you know what I mean? Yeah. When you go to that patreon.com/headintheoffice and you become a patron and get early access to episodes, you not only get access to the episode before everybody else, but you also get access to the broader community, a culture of listening to the Sunday sermon. Come on.
And I would say you, in a way, transcend politics and become something else, something bigger, something more important.
Exactly.
A hitto head.
You transcend just your own being and assimilate into the new cause.
All I'm gonna say is I'm glad Martin Luther's not alive, because he'd be knocking on our door 99 theses.
Knock, knock, knocking on the studio.
You are buying your way to heaven.
Speaking of Martin Luther, also, if you've got something on your mind, maybe, you know, end of the year, you have a lot of time laying in your bed reflecting on all the mistakes you've ever made since middle school. Mm-hmm. You can absolutely absolve yourself of all of those if you just hop on the angel investor tier.
That's right. You can do that, or you can go and buy yourself some Hitto merch, headintheoffice.com. I got some on right now. I don't know if you can see this on the YouTube video.
Oh, look at that.
Hitto Media LLC on my back, Angel Investor.
Incorporated.
That's right.
Incorporated.
So if you want to get some merch, there's a bunch available for you. We got several different things you could take a look at.
But as always, if you want to show your support for the show completely for free.
Completely for free.
You could help us out by leaving a 5-star review on Apple. Today... We got a book to read.
You want me to take this
from
first
this
one?
Review, you can take it.
I'll take this first one by clay.co2004, A Beacon of Insight in the Sea of Political Noise.
Yes, sir.
It's a long one. Here we go. In the ever-turbulent ocean of political podcasts, Head in the Office emerges as a lighthouse, guiding listeners with its illuminating insights and refreshing perspectives. Hosts Jeremy and Gage, the proclaimed political gurus, not proclaimed, just proven political gurus.
You know, that title's really been just ascribed to me by everyone else.
It's just how it goes.
Yeah, I'm super humble about it. So.
Masterfully dissect weekly news, offering a leftist viewpoint that's as enlightening as it is entertaining. Their coverage is not just a mere recap of events, it's a deep dive into the heart of societal issues, from flirtations with fascism to the glaring inequalities that plague our systems. The duo's ability to blend comedy with charming commentary transforms what could be a mundane news summary into a captivating experience. That's what we were just saying.
I've been saying this.
What truly sets this podcast apart is its fearless approach to calling out the flaws on both sides of the political spectrum. Whether it's discussing the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, really both sides of that issue.
Yeah, I love both. That's my favorite issue actually.
Yeah. LGBTQ issues or the latest in American politics, Jeremy and Gage do so with a balance of wit and wisdom. Mm-hmm. Their takes often echoed on their TikTok resonate with a sense of authenticity and courage that's rare in today's media landscape.
Love sitting on the fence, that's separates Gaza from the rest of Israel.
Oh, yeah, I'm right on that's the physical fence
I like to sit on. Uh-huh,
Moreover, the podcast engagement with its audience through platforms like Patreon and social media adds a layer of community and accessibility that enriches the listening experience. We've been saying this. The regular updates on Gaza, electoral politics, and other global issues, obviously, as being the number one geopolitical podcast, keep listeners not just informed, but also emotionally invested. In conclusion, a conclusion paragraph?
Oh,
come
goodness,
on.
Bro.
Head in the Office is more than just a podcast. It's a movement, a community, a much-needed voice in a world often dominated by one-sided narratives. It's a 5-star masterpiece.
Oh my God.
That educates, entertains, and empowers. A must-listen for anyone seeking clarity and camaraderie in these complex times. proud to join the ranks of Sunday supremacists and ditch the Wednesday weenie title.
Yes, sir.
I am thrilled that our completely non-parasocial relationship has come this far. Yours always, Chris from Texas. Yes, there are leftists here too.
You know, I actually think we checked like a year ago. I mentioned this like a couple months ago also. We have a plurality of our listeners are from Texas.
Yeah.
When we break down the demographics, which is crazy to think about.
Maybe it's just because we've been shitting on Texas so much.
Texas,
like, you deserve it.
For real.
Individually.
Oh, my God. We're going to talk about it later. I wonder if you live in one of those counties that made it like illegal to transport someone who's going to get an abortion through.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be crazy.
They've been trying. I also love, and we've talked about this before, how the number one geopolitical podcast thing just kind of stuck.
Oh my God, I know.
For those that don't know, this originated, I don't know, when we first started, probably like when we started talking about Afghanistan in August
of 2021. It was like our eighth episode or some shit.
Talking about Afghanistan and like all the bad shit United States has done in the Middle East, et cetera. And we were like, yeah, we're the number one geopolitical podcast, saying that sarcastically because neither of us have a background in it. But I think I have an extreme, I'll say I'm an expert at this point.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know what? I'll go ahead and say it.
I don't know why no one's given me like an honorary doctorate in international relations yet.
Oh my God.
Where's that at?
James Madison College. Come on, pull up, invite me back. What's
Harvard,
going on?
Come on now.
Oh my goodness. This next review, Teacher in Texas by Redacted, the CEOs. I'm a simple man. All I want for Christmas is a Hitto Patreon subscription and the condemnation of Hamas from all my family, acquaintances, and non-parasocial real-life friends. Well, you know you already got it from us.
That's what I was going to say. Real-life friends.
We already got it. We've dished it out.
Unfortunately, all of your family and acquaintances getting a condemnation from of Hamas from all of them is going to be a tall order.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you know, it's going to be like you're at the UN and they're trying to...
I was just about to say it. You can't, I mean, if you've got any friends or family in the UN, it's not going to happen.
It's like, fuck, man. Simply they refuse.
Speaking of that, we can jump into our news coverage.
Yes, sir.
This is concerning Gaza and Israel and the UN. Small update here, as I said before, not a ton of news, but the UN Security Council finally did something productive for once.
Wow.
As they finally passed a resolution calling for pauses in the fighting between Israel and Hamas to establish, quote, humanitarian corridors throughout Gaza.
That's crazy. That was one of the first things that they tried to do two months ago when this the conflict first started.
Yeah, they've been working on this for a minute.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Specifically, though, the resolution calls for, quote, and this is from CNN, urgent and extended humanitarian pauses and corridors throughout the Gaza Strip for a sufficient number of days to enable full, rapid, safe, and unhindered humanitarian access. If some of that seems vague to you, it also seems vague to me.
Yeah, let me guess. America voted no on behalf of Israel and used their ultimate veto power because for some reason we have just a veto power to veto anything that happens in the Security Council. And Israel and the U.S. justified it by saying, well, how do we know Hamas isn't taking these humanitarian corridors to flee to Qatar or some shit?
I don't blame you for thinking that, but that's actually not the story here.
Really?
You're a couple feet off the mark. It's kind of what happened.
Okay.
So the resolution did pass, by the way. So with the language that I had just read.
Because it's so vague.
Yeah, but the resolution originally contained language that called for, and I'm quoting, an immediate cessation of hostilities, which I guess was too close to ceasefire for them, and for the UN to, quote, establish a monitoring mechanism in the Gaza Strip with the necessary personnel and equipment under the authority of the United Nations Secretary General. To my knowledge, neither of these pieces made it into the final resolution that was passed, I think, on Friday. And as you alluded to, the group that single-handedly prevented those pieces from being in was the United States. In fact, the United States, after making all of these changes and getting all these concessions out of the other members of the Security Council, abstained from the final vote.
Oh.
Didn't veto the fucking knights in shining armor.
Oh, you know, because it's better to talk to Netanyahu quietly in the background instead of, you know, actually doing things that are going to do stuff. I like how we got rid of the actionable goals.
Yes, yeah. The immediate cessation of hostilities, again, probably too close to ceasefire. And the one that interested me was the monitoring mechanism, which I guess would mean UN, probably aid workers or just like, healthcare workers going into the Gaza Strip. And Israel was probably like, we can't have that because how would we kill innocent Palestinians in the street if the UN is there.
How would our snipers be able to hit journalists and children who throw pebbles when the UN is watching what we do?
Like, yeah. The UN would go in with, like, you know, their probably bulletproof vests and, you know, like the peacekeeping corps uniform. And they'd be like, well, how did I know that wasn't just Hamas wearing a UN uniform?
How do I know they didn't steal it? You know, when they Hamas got a hold of the supplies because they steal everything. You know, they're digging up the water pipes and everything, you know.
So. Yeah. So this resolution did pass through the Security Council, meaning it's a binding agreement. All Security Council nations have to adhere to it, including the United States. But it's very, very vague, and Israel had some stuff to say about it.
Of course they did. I'm sure they whined and cried about it.
Israel's not on the Security Council, but I believe the resolution will still apply to them. But they did thank the U.S. for their efforts. And then an official said, quote, and this is my favorite part.
Okay.
In our view, the resolution is unnecessary and proves the inability for the UN to play a positive role in the conflict. After nearly 3 months, the UN has yet to condemn the massacre of October 7th.
Come on, man.
So to translate, UN, do you condemn Hamas? Have you condemned Hamas? Why can't you condemn Hamas?
Man.
Oh my, what was the original death toll from Hamas, like 1200 or something like that? And now what, 2100 Palestinians are dead?
21,000.
Or 21,000 Palestinians are dead at this point. Like, just exponentially increasing that number. So a positive development relative to what the UN Security Council had done previously, what we covered previously, but I wouldn't call it good.
No, yeah, it's just like, what's going to happen? What work is going to be done? They're like, you guys cannot play a positive role in this conflict when you're trying to stop the conflict. Like, we need you to play a role in the conflict. We don't want to stop it.
Yeah, well, the UN's got, like, I don't know, what, 160, 170 member nations or something like that? And, like, 150 of them are like, yeah, we need a ceasefire.
This shit is bad,
and it's
guys.
Like, the U.S., I think Russia abstained from this vote on the Security Council, and there was, like, a handful of other nations in the General Assembly that voted against the ceasefire measure that did pass the General Assembly but can't do anything last week.
Oh, my God. Because they didn't condemn Hamas hard enough, right?
Well, yeah, that's, and the U.S. was like, why can't we condemn Hamas?
Yeah, we can't pass this non-binding resolution. We can't even signify that we would even consider passing it since you guys didn't condemn the October 7th attacks.
Yeah, so summary, similar to the last several weeks, not good.
Not good, not very good.
We'll see. I mean, any humanitarian supplies getting in is good, but I'm sure it'll be insufficient, even though the resolution says, like, hey, we need sufficient humanitarian access, but who knows what that's going to be.
Yeah, what is that going to be? Yeah.
Matter of perspective, I would say. Moving on to the next item, probably the biggest piece of news.
Trump.
We're talking Donald Trump, my president, your president.
45.
A future king, 47 as well.
45 and 47. Uh-huh. Oh, my God. Is that how that works? Would he be 47 and 45?
Yeah.
So what, was Obama 43 and 44, or was he just 44 because he served two consecutive terms?
Obama would have just been 44, but I think, who's the other one that served... served two terms, like
I can't
not
remember.
Connected Grover Cleveland, I think.
Yeah,
I don't remember what number he was, but he would have been, like, for example, 35 then 37 or something like that.
Oh, really?
Because he ran again. So we know Trump's gonna win because he's my president.
Well, of course, yeah, he's my president. I'm advocating for Trump. Uh-huh. I think
I've already got my 15
conflict.
Ballots lined up that I'm gonna stuff into the ballot box in my precinct.
Oh, I've been in Maricopa County just stuffing shit underneath trees, ready to put them in drop boxes.
If they're not gonna make ballot harvesting illegal, I'm gonna do it.
I'm gonna use the tools that are at my disposal. Like, guys, let's be real. Uh-huh. Gas is cheap right now. I've been stockpiling for my road trip around the country.
So you all probably know what we're referencing. In some pretty big news last week, the Colorado Supreme Court voted to kick Donald Trump off of the ballot in their state specifically, just Colorado.
Yes.
Meaning that Trump would be, if this sticks, and there's a lot we have to talk about here, meaning Trump would be ineligible to receive any votes in the state of Colorado. This would apply to both the primary and general election. Now, this recording is prior to any follow-up court cases that are, I'm going to assume, imminent from the Supreme Court.
The follow-up court cases that are going to drop on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, maybe.
Most likely.
I believe the deadline to get on Colorado's ballot, though, is like January 6th or something like that.
I think
so. They got to resolve this pretty quick.
I think that's the general deadline to get become a certified candidate in the GOP primary.
In the GOP primary, yeah. That would make sense. But the Supreme Court of Colorado kicked Donald Trump off of the ballot. I would assume, if we're just stating this at the top, I would assume this is going to go to the Supreme Court. I think they've already agreed to hear the case.
And, oh, did they really?
I'm guessing the Supreme Court will bail Trump out because it's 6-3 conservative, and half of those conservatives were appointed by Donald Trump himself. You know, elections have consequences and all that. But more specifically, the case was Anderson v. Griswold. The Colorado Supreme Court ruled that Donald Trump is disqualified now from holding office, the office of the president under the Constitution's insurrection clause, which we'll get to in a moment. this doesn't really matter for Colorado for two reasons. One, it's not a big primary state for the GOP election. Mm-hmm. Trump can lose Colorado, get zero primary delegates in Colorado, and he could still win the primary.
Yeah.
And also, general election, Trump isn't going to get Colorado in the Electoral College anyways.
It's pretty blue state.
It's always going to go to a Democrat unless something insane happens, like Biden getting kicked off the Colorado ballot. Trump's not going to get Colorado's electoral votes anyway. He doesn't need Colorado to win. What's more important here is the precedent that's going to be established, I think, especially in relation to what Trump did and encouraged on January 6th.
What's
going to
be important is when the Supreme Court makes a bad decision about this.
Oh, yeah, and it's going to be bad. and the grounds on which it's made is going to be very important, which I think we can get into. So let's start with the legal justification here, what the Colorado Supreme Court said, and then we can get into the optical battle.
You know,
of course, that
optics matters
as well.
Yeah.
So never before has a court ruled that a candidate is disqualified from seeking the presidency under this specific section of the Constitution. Gonna assume, based on everything that I've read, that it's because of January 6th. Trump, more specifically, though, was disqualified under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which is titled the Disqualification from Holding Office section.
Aptly named.
Yeah. And I'll read it real quick for any of you that aren't congressional or constitutional scholars like we are. Because I know it front to back,
you
back of my
saying?
Hand, basically.
I keep that shit in my back pocket all the time. When I'm bored, like, waiting for shit to happen at work, when I'm walking from my car to work, I'd be looking at this. I'd
annotate
it,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, shit, I make realizations. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I don't really make realizations. I discover what was originally written because I don't interpret.
Well, I got my Hebrew translated copy of the U.S. Constitution.
Hell yeah, brother.
That they found on an IDF soldier because he loves America so much.
Fuck yeah. And, you know, and the originalist that I am, I don't have any annotations in my text.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because the text is itself an annotation.
I would be interpreting it, so what more do I need?
That's a great point. I can't believe I betrayed my ideals, though. Anyway, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment reads as follows. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of the president or a president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, but Congress may vote of 2/3 of each house to remove such a disability. Just like a lot of the other pieces of the Constitution, poorly written.
Not a great document. Run on.
Hard to read.
Run on.
There's a few things to consider here, though, when it comes to this section of the Constitution. So the Colorado Supreme Court is arguing that Trump violated Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which says, you know, if you're an elected official of the United States, you can't do insurrection and run for another office.
Yeah.
And so he's therefore disqualified, right? That's kind of the basis of what the Supreme Court said. I think the decision was like 4-3 or something like that. So it's not as if it was unanimous. One argument against this, which is the low-hanging fruit, is that, it wasn't an insurrection, which is like, you know, right-wingers are going to say that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's nothing new. They've been saying that about J6 for a while. An argument that was highlighted from the dissenting judges on this case is that states all handle elections differently. So this ruling is going to be inconsistent across different states, causing chaos. And what I'm saying is that's America, brother.
Hell yeah.
You're looking for consistency, wrong people, wrong country. You're not looking in the right place if you want consistency. That's how our system's set up. Another argument is that Section 3, and this one might be my favorite, Section 3 doesn't explicitly list president as an office that one can be disqualified from for doing an insurrection.
Oh, shit.
If you either look back at the text or listen to what I said, it doesn't explicitly say president anywhere in there except for elector of president.
As an originalist, when it's convenient for me, I'm going to have to stick with the text here. I'm going to have to stick with the text here and say that the big guy, the highest officer, who's not technically an officer, is disqualified from this ruling.
It does say in the section that an officer of the United States would be disqualified, and a lot of people are saying, well, that counts as president's an officer in an officer position. And I think more than that, it would be really fucking dumb if the framers were like, an insurrectionist can't be a state legislator, but they could be president.
Yeah. An insurrectionist can't be like a member of the House, but they can be more powerful.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it wouldn't really make any sense. Also, it seems that the majority of the Colorado Supreme Court agrees. They said in the majority opinion, quote, President Trump asks us to hold that that Section 3 disqualifies every oath-breaking insurrectionist except the most powerful one, and that it bars oath breakers from virtually every office, both state and federal, except the highest one in the land. Both results are inconsistent with the plain language and history of Section 3.
Well, yeah, I mean, if your state comptroller can't go and do this shit, yeah, but the president can, I think there's an issue.
It really wouldn't make any sense. But who knows? Textualist originalists, we'll see what they think of it. One final argument, though, speaking of originalism and not interpreting anything, one final argument is that Section 3 was designed as a Civil War era amendment to keep Confederates out of office, and it shouldn't be used to disqualify anybody now. This is an argument.
Oh, that's
we heard.
Why it was a full amendment to the Constitution. That's why it was there, so that it could stay in what's supposed to be a living, breathing document to be the overall arbiter of what is the law of the land for future to come.
Yeah, that we heard this argument from people like Vivek Ramaswamy and a couple others, but it's like, I thought we were originalists. I'm just reading the text, it doesn't say Confederate anywhere in there.
That's what I'm saying. And it's like,
if they wanted to say Confederate, they would have wrote Confederate.
They'd have wrote Confederate, or they would, I guess, have amended the Constitution just to amend it back to get rid of it, because we're past
exactly.
Reconstruction,
been years.
Baby. Come on.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything about Confederates in there. If they wanted it to say Confederates, they could have wrote any member of the Confederacy can't hold a position in the United States government, but they didn't write that. So I'm going to have to stick with the original interpretation, and not even interpretation, the original meaning.
That's what I'm saying. I'm going to have to stick with the text. Look at the textual evidence.
Officer of the United States, and taking all that information together, I'm just going to say, seems like Trump is, it seems like the Colorado Supreme Court is wholly inbounds ruling. One last ramification, though, of course, legally, is that it's not going to stick. This is going to go to the Supreme Court. They're going to say no. They're going to say all challenges to Trump's presidency are legally irrelevant. Not enough evidence for an insurrection or something. Like, they'll come up with some justification for it.
It's like
Trump will be able to run.
I know the Supreme Court already denied Jack Smith's motion to get the immunity trial on whether or not Trump was immune from this federal prosecution before the election up. They already denied the motion to accelerate that. Yeah. So that's going to go whenever it is after the election be ruled on. Fucking after anything relevant passes.
Yeah.
So I'm not hopeful.
No, I'm not hopeful either. They're obviously going to side with Trump on this. I don't even know if we had liberal judges on the bench if they would like vote to kick Trump off of the ballot.
Uh-huh.
And well, what the ruling would be if they didn't side with Trump is just that like states can kick candidates off the ballot if they find they violated Section 3 of the 14th
federalism.
Amendment. Right. That's what it would be like. States can do this if they want to. But what I'm guessing is going to happen is SCOTUS is going to, because I'm guessing Trump has similar legal challenges in other states that are working their way through the legal system.
New Hampshire or something. I had not New Hampshire. Maine or some fucking state on the East Coast, their attorney general has to make a decision now about whether or not Trump should be allowed on the ballot.
Yeah. So I'm guessing Colorado is the first state to get this done. Other states are probably considering something similar, or Trump has some kind of legal challenge. So what SCOTUS is going to come in and say is all those legal challenges mean nothing. States can't do this, and Trump will be able to remain on the ballot. And that's why I said the precedent's important here, because if a presidential candidate does do an insurrection or tries to do an insurrection, what the SCOTUS decision might say is that states individually can't apply the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to these candidates, which is kind of crazy. Like, what's the fucking point of it?
Is it that, or is it that SCOTUS will just decide to redefine what insurrection means to conveniently not mean whatever happened on January 6th?
Yeah, the calmer route they could go is to say, like, oh, well, Trump wasn't actually there during the insurrection, so it's fine.
See, but it's like, all right, maybe I'm going to get into corny liberal territory here, which is kind of how I feel about January 6th discourse in general. But it's like, while I don't walk around going, Trump did an insurrection, he kind of did an insurrection. Guys.
He did.
Like,
he did.
He literally did. He quite literally organized. And I'm not even talking about what actually happened, the riot at the Capitol and the storming of the Capitol.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, one, that in conjunction with his call to Georgia and the newly revealed phone call with GOP RNC chairwoman and the two electors from Wayne County who refused to certify the election, and how it was revealed that Trump pressured them into not certifying the election originally when they should have. You remember all that drama?
Yeah, no, there's mounds of evidence to suggest, like, Trump was trying to change the results of the election.
Yeah, the call just came out this week that Trump was pressuring these two electors to not certify the Wayne County election results, which is what won Joe Biden Michigan and helped win him the presidency.
Local election officials were harassed because Donald Trump and his allies guys wanted them to
and
be.
And he encouraged it. Yeah. He vocalized that they should go out and harass these people, that they should do the right thing. That is quite literally an organized attempt to disobey the government and how elections should be. And with that, it necessarily is also a violation of his oath of office to not only protect the Constitution, but also ensure safe and fair elections for everyone.
Yeah. And that's kind of my critique of, like, in terms of, like, January 6th being viewed as, like, this very liberal thing to focus on. That's kind of my critique for, like, leftists and liberals on this issue is, like, leftists, I feel like, don't take January 6th seriously enough. Like, it was a legitimate attempt to change election results after Joe Biden had won. But I also feel like liberals don't take this seriously enough because they'll whine about it. They'll complain about it. They'll call Trump an insurrectionist, which I think is correct. But then the Democrats have basically done nothing to make this process painful for the GOP. We're seeing legal processes play out now. But if the Democratic Party was worth literally anything, the GOP would be buried after January 6th.
Yeah, I think it's an issue of optics. I think it's an issue of what they choose to focus on and what they choose to push in the media. I think what makes January 6th corny is how liberals focus on the actual, like, storming of the Capitol itself and not on all of the phone calls that Trump made that we got him on, that we literally have recordings of him trying to get election results overturned, of him trying to get state legislatures and people in power to lie about who won the election in their state so that he could maintain power. That's where the insurrection is. Like, obviously the storming of the Capitol was the bad thing, but I don't think that's optically what should be focused on.
Yeah, it's not the only thing that happened.
Yeah, and it's not, like, the bad thing that happened. When it was happening, yeah, that was crazy.
And I think, I feel like people maybe struggle to take the whole January 6th, like, arguments and optics seriously, because it's like, Trump, he's now facing legal challenges because of it, but beforehand, for years, he kind of just got away with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's 2020, for four fucking years.
What message did that send to the population where it's like, okay, the guy who just lost can go and cause what happened on January 6th. He can do all these bogus challenges to election results and basically face no consequences whatsoever. The new president is just going to kind of never talk about it?
Yeah.
Like, what message does that send to everybody? It just, I feel like, contributes to this feeling that it isn't being taken seriously. And I think it stems from liberals talking about it a bunch, but never really doing anything about it. Because if we were serious about Trump being someone who tried to cause an insurrection, the GOP would have been buried on January 7th. They would have been a completely unviable political party.
Oh, my God. And it's like, correct me if I'm wrong, but did it really take 3 years to grow all of the evidence that we needed to bring the Georgia case?
I don't know.
That phone call came out like a couple months after the election.
Yeah,
like
we knew.
He did that and it almost immediately leaked.
Yeah. And then it just gives rise for people to say, like, oh, they're just doing this during an election year to make it look bad for Trump.
Yeah.
Which, like, maybe.
Sure.
And I don't really buy the argument that we shouldn't be challenging him legally. Like, what, we're just going to allow him to get away with it? Uh-huh. That doesn't sound like a good idea for a democracy, right? But the fact that liberals seemingly have been so reluctant to do anything on this issue for so long it makes it seem like it is just a political attack.
And yeah, I just think that the hyper-focusing on the actual, like, storming of the Capitol is what's doing so much culturally to make January 6th corny. Because it's everything that Trump did in the background that is the vicious and nefarious shit.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, the storming of the Capitol, that shit was bad. You know what I mean? Obviously, they were protesting for a wrong reason.
Yeah, but
that's what made it bad.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the hammer should have been brought down years ago at this point. And Trump should have been probably put in jail for everything that he did back
It's
then.
Almost like they focused harder on putting the individual January 6th rioters in jail than they focused on putting the guy who orchestrated all of the shit in jail and everyone who's orbiting around him. Like, come on. Like, we didn't need to wait 3 years to get Sidney Powell to squeal.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, like, make it illegal, like, make the Republican Party illegal as a whole or anything like that, but any Republicans, people like Ted Cruz that openly supported what Donald Trump was trying to do, they should be facing similar challenges under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Otherwise, like, what are we doing? It does just come across as liberals trying to attack Trump if we're not actually trying to eliminate the insurrectionists.
Liberals just routinely doing too little too late.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, why aren't we going harder after the people in the House who tried to refuse to certify the election?
Yeah.
Like, the night of, like, come on, people. Like, I think the whole focus when it comes to the insurrection is off. And the well has been so poisoned when we talk about public opinion with the actual riot itself that I think most people are going to think this is kind of bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. You should have been pushing this a long time ago, and I don't know why they weren't. And you may say, like, oh, well, then it just comes across as them attacking political opponents. It's like, it's a, well, sure, yeah, it might. But it's a pro-democracy move to ensure anti-democracy people can't win power.
And it's also, when political opponents deserve to be attacked, they should.
People when attack, they commit crimes.
People attack political opponents all the time. When just because someone is someone's political opponent does not mean that they are immune to the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I feel like, because we can transition in the conversation about optics, like,
yeah.
Optically, I feel like the public is going to view this, like a large swath of people are going to view this as an overly pedantic application of what an insurrection is, as an overly pedantic reading of the law. And honestly, even with that framing, I'm still cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we use overly pedantic readings of the law to lock away, I don't know, dudes who are trying to raise their family, struggling to work, who sold a couple grams of weed on the side.
Yeah.
We locked them up for years. With these hyper-technical readings of the law.
It's like a lot of people at this point are arguing like, well, this is just going to boost Trump in the polls because it's going to kind of fulfill his victim complex, right?
Yeah.
Like he's been arguing for years now, since before 2016, that he is being attacked by the deep state. He's trying to root out the deep state. And now the deep state's lashing out against him by disqualifying him from the ballot or whatever. But like, sure, that might fulfill the narrative that he's trying to spin. But what else do we do, right? Like, if anybody claims this, do we just not prosecute them for actual crimes that they've committed? Do we not disqualify them from running after they've done legitimately anti-democratic things?
Yeah.
No, you still got to apply the law to them, even if it fulfills their narrative, even if it mobilizes some amount of grassroots support, if you could even call it that, for Donald Trump. I've never bought the argument that just because it could be optically good for Trump, we should just never apply the law to him.
But it's also like, they've been saying this for years and nothing has been optically good for him.
Yeah, no,
the indictments
I think so
were actually very bad for Trump.
Yeah.
Like, most people in the public think like, oh yeah, that's kind of, it's kind of messy now.
Yeah, it's just, it's annoying to see like liberals be very institutionalist, right? Like
They are
in support of institutions merely so the institutions can exist. But then when it comes to wielding actual institutional power against legitimate fascistic or anti-democratic forces, they just refuse to do it because it could look bad, because they're obsessed with, I don't know, civility politics.
Oh, now you care about optics.
Or not applying, I don't know, not using power, not seeming despotic themselves. And it's like, it's not despotic to prevent despots from ever gaining political power.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so annoying to see them talk so much about how they care about institutions and preserving these sacred halls, then using none of the actual power they have to do it.
And it's like, again, so much of this, I'll reiterate a million times, so much of this is because they didn't handle this issue properly out the gate. They focused on the wrong part, and they continue to focus on the wrong part. Looking back at the January 6th trials in Congress, did we learn like anything that is substantively being used right now?
I think so. And I think I was in favor of the January 6th commission doing their thing. I think good information about
it came
out.
Is that when we found out about the Sidney Powell stuff, or was that from the Fox News leak?
I don't remember, honestly. That might have been the Fox News
leak. Or was the Fox News leak a part of the trials? I genuinely don't remember them.
Yeah, no, I think the January 6th commission overall was a good thing. But yeah, it's just like imagine if a leftist organization tried to do what happened on January 6th.
Oh,
or
cooked.
Tried to overturn elections. Yeah,
cooked.
No, like public executions. Right.
Absolutely cooked, and anyone affiliated with them on a podcast banned from the airwaves.
Yeah, and I'm not saying like publicly execute Donald Trump or anything insane. Let him see his day in court, obviously, but the fact that it's only happening now and the fact that we've allowed it to be drawn out so long, it just speaks to the, I don't know, unseriousness, I guess, or at the very least weakness of liberals in this country.
Yeah.
It's just very annoying. Like, if we're going to protect democracy, let's protect democracy. This is why nobody believes you when you're like, democracy's on the line, because you don't act like it until it's time to get votes.
Exactly. No, for real. They don't care about democracy being on the line until it's an election year.
Yeah.
Let's be real. They don't do anything in the meantime to get the word. Oh my, it's so frustrating.
I'm the only real Democrat. Small D.
Exactly.
Small D Democrat.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Anyway, speaking of GOP candidates switching sides here, they've sort of come to Trump's defense on this. Vivek was the biggest meat rider. He pledged to remove himself from the Colorado ballot in protest.
I'm removing myself from the primary because I'm protesting this decision, not because I'm going to lose anyway.
And he challenged others to do the same thing. So he said Nikki Haley, Chris Christie, Ron DeSantis should all also pledge to remove themselves. He's a fucking nerd. That's
He's trying so hard for a cabinet position that he is not going to get.
Yeah, yeah. Chris Christie and Nikki Haley basically said the voters should decide, not courts, which is just kind of like the classic argument I've been seeing.
Really? The voters should decide whether or not he violated the law.
Yeah. And I think Ron DeSantis had something to say, but it wasn't anything too different from Chris Christie and Nikki Haley. Basically, GOP never letting a good opportunity to meet ride pass them by.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what they did. Oh, my God. That is the corniest shit I think he has ever done.
And it's like, I get optically for a Republican, it'd probably be bad to come out and be like, yeah, Trump should be in jail for what he did.
Uh-huh.
But I thought that's what Chris Christie was all about. You know what I
mean?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Like, I thought that was his whole shtick, but now he's like, no, the court shouldn't decide, even though he did commit crimes. What are we doing,
like,
Christie, Chris?
Realistically, you're obviously not going to win the primary in any state, dare I say. Probably not even New Jersey, the place where you did hold political office. And you probably don't have much of a career ahead of you. Yeah. I can't even cap. Uh-huh. So why not just come out? Why not do the, what's the Republican that was big on the January 6th commission? Liz Cheney, and start switching up.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real.
This feels like, well, especially for all these guys that aren't going to win, right? Like, they're playing for a second right now. The only chance you got is either Trump dies or he gets kicked off the ballot or ends up in jail, something like that.
Yeah.
Now's your chance. Make it happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Vivek, I mean, if he does somehow get kicked off the ballot, why don't you stay on?
Uh-huh. Well, it's like Chris Christie, you're obviously not going to win, but your goal is to get somebody else other than Donald Trump, ostensibly. That's what he keeps saying. Now's your chance to hammer that home and be like, I fully support the ruling out of Colorado.
Or keep white knighting Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
Come on.
No, it's crazy. But the only chance they really got is if Trump loses, or if the only way that Trump could lose is by getting put in jail, getting disqualified, or dying. And barring those options, I mean, they've got no chance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, shit, all those options are on the horizon, though.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Bro is 80 and in legal trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, it could happen.
I don't know.
It could happen. We'll see. Anyway, I think it's time to move on.
Yeah, I think it's time to move on to a section, little section I like to call Ken Paxton is ontologically evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can guess why I'm calling it that. But
By his very nature.
Before we properly dive into this, we have to play a little bit of catch up on Texas state law.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you can guess where this is going. So in early September of this year, I can't believe that we missed this.
Okay.
Texas became the largest state to issue a total ban on gender-affirming care for youth.
Sick.
That's what I'm
saying.
There's
a lot going on in September.
So crazy. A lot going on in Texas all the time anyway.
Yeah.
Like we're always playing catch up on bad Texas news. I can't imagine living out there. RIP to all of you guys. But anyway, in early September of this year, Texas became the largest state to issue a total ban on gender-affirming care for youth. The law threatens to remove the medical license of any doctor who provides minors with gender-affirming care like HRT, puberty blockers, and surgeries that barely happen anyway.
So we're killing people. Sick.
Yeah, yeah. For those receiving any of the previously stated treatment, that law dictates that they must be weaned off of their puberty blockers or HRT. But as Laura Baron Lopez reports on PBS, advocates within Texas claimed that doctors and pharmacies have decided not to test their luck with allegations, so they aren't actually weaning patients off of the medication. They're just going to stop dispensing it.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's akin to the situation we had with methotrexate, the arthritis drug that is also used for abortions in Texas, where women with RA just couldn't get their drugs to help them live a non-painful life because pharmacists couldn't prove that they weren't using it for an abortion. And with the bounty hunter laws going on, accusations could just be thrown out and they would be forced to defend themselves and put us in financially precarious positions.
Right. So the law says you got to wean them off, but doctors are like, if I am weaning them off, then I'm not going to beat the allegations that I'm just helping transition.
Exactly. Like, okay, if I am weaning them
chilling
off,
effect.
Like, what standards do I have to meet to make sure you don't come after me for doing proper care that I'm supposed to be doing? I'm just not going to fucking play with it at all.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose my license.
God,
insane.
That's so evil. Jesus
insane
Christ.
Insane outside of Texas right now. But anyway, if that's not bad enough. Now, Ken Paxton, this is going to be important here. Sounds pedantic, but stay with me. Ken Paxton, the Texas state attorney general has threatened a hospital in Seattle, Washington, demanding that they hand over a list of all of their trans youth that reside in Texas or have resided in Texas who travel for care at that hospital.
What you need a list for, Ken?
That's what I'm saying.
You're not America's attorney general.
Oh my my God, he's acting like it. Acting like he has jurisdiction in another state 30 hours away.
What the fuck is going on? What does he think he is? You give me a list of everyone from Texas that has been in your hospital. Fuck
it's
off.
It's ridiculous. According to a Los Angeles Blade who linked the full letter from Baxton, it said, quote, the demands include no redaction and apply to any Texas trans youth.
Demands? What position are you in for demands?
The letter also states that the hospital is required by law to, quote, wean children off of gender-affirming care if they travel or have moved from Texas. The letter also lists several other records-related demands and even threatens Seattle, Washington, hospital workers with jail time if they do not comply. Other demands include, quote, medications prescribed, concurrent diagnoses for patients, lab tests, information on the hospital's standards of care, and a demand that the hospital shows it has weaned trans youth residing or who have resided in Texas off of the care.
Dog, what federalist system? You can't do
that's
this.
That's what I, dog.
You're a state.
You are in tech, brother. You do not live in Seattle. You are not the Washington AG, dog. What is going on?
What do you think you're doing? You can't threaten. What are you talking about, man?
That's what I'm saying. I don't even understand where he's getting the audacity to try something like this.
This can't be constitutional.
Because also it's like, what does this imply? Say somehow some ruling, the Texas Supreme Court, and then ultimately the Supreme Court, who always makes bad decisions, comes through and says, oh yeah, Ken can do that. Does that just imply that Texas owns the bodies of everyone right. who lives in or has lived in Texas, well, despite the Commerce Clause?
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure the U.S. Constitution, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, says the U.S. government regulates interstate trade.
Yeah, and that includes healthcare.
Not the states themselves. Well, yeah, no, exactly. It includes healthcare, of course, because it's a form of interstate commerce. Texas itself can't do this. And I know right now, I don't know if you've got this in the show as well, but Texas and other Republican states are working to form travel bans for abortions.
That's what I got going on.
And I'm guessing
later
it's
going
to apply to gender affirming care as well.
And this is the most, what can I say? This is the most drastic like step that any Republican has taken.
I know, it's crazy.
In challenging the fucking Commerce Clause.
Oh, but we're all originalists. We're all originalists until we just want to own our citizens.
Federalist system, small government until I want to govern someone else's government. What the fuck are we talking about? Anyway, the hospital responded by filing a lawsuit in Travis County, Texas, claiming rightfully that Ken, who is the Texas Attorney General, has no jurisdiction in Washington State. They also cited the Constitution's guarantee of a right to interstate travel. Okay. And finally, Washington itself has a law that protects patient data from subpoena pursuant to, quote, protected healthcare services under the jurisdiction of Washington. It's a law that they explicitly passed and put on the books to stop other states from being able to do this because some motherfucker with foresight 100 was able to predict
that somebody,
would have the audacity to go outside their state. God damn.
And let's think like numbers for a second, right? Like you're in Texas. Okay. So we're pulling solely from the Texas population. We already know trans people are a very small percentage of any
population. Do you want to know how many trans youth are in Texas? It's 30,000.
Okay, there's 30,000 trans youth?
Yeah, of like the millions of people in Texas.
And now we got to try to predict how many are going all the way to Washington, the state of Washington, to
30 get hours away.
Gender-affirming care. It's got to be an even smaller proportion of that group, right?
Yeah.
Like maybe, what, 5%, 10%
and it's
of
like
all
that's,
of them?
I don't know if that 30,000 number, that there's no way that 30,000 number is all people who have medically transitioned either.
Oh, yeah,
probably
right.
Who just identify.
Yeah. And of those, how many actually made it all the way to fucking Seattle?
Seattle, Washington! The other side of the country!
And then we got this evil dude sitting in Texas, like, tracking them. I want a list. Why do you need a list?
And it's like,
what's a government need a list for?
The two broad things here are, one, it seems like conservatives are just ultimately trying to challenge the Commerce Clause, which is insane.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane. One of the most like well-defined and legislated pieces of the Constitution, you know what I mean? And with regard to abortion access, many states, Texas included, have already started implementing crafty legislation that doesn't technically, but still functionally, restricts a person's ability to cross state lines to receive care. I mentioned earlier, there are counties in Texas who made it illegal to transport someone who is getting an abortion through the county.
That's ridiculous.
What the fuck, man?
Oh my God.
How? What the how? Texas also has their bounty hunter laws. Idaho, I think, is a state that made, quote, abortion trafficking illegal. So yeah, bringing someone across their state lines to traffic an abortion, to have someone get an abortion. And states are doing crafty things to just make sure that they can say, no, I'm only regulating what happens inside mine, but you got to cross mine to get to the other one.
Yeah, I remember, I think back in 2021 or maybe summer 2022, Democrats it must have been summer because it was after the Roe v. Wade got overturned.
Yeah.
Democrats in Congress were like, okay, fine. You know, we're not going to get an abortion law passed. Let's just pass a law that says people can travel with, you know, a protected right at the national level for people to travel in between states for abortion services. Yep. You wouldn't guess what party voted against that. Republican Party, it never passed.
You wouldn't be able to guess what party who ostensibly supports the Constitution and
freedom
beats off to the Constitution and loves talking about it and invoking it every chance they can get would be the ones going against the Constitution.
Yeah, and this is just like flies in the face of jurisdiction as a concept.
Oh my God, I know.
You can't tell people what to do once they've left your state.
It's not
straight
even,
up.
It's not even a state that's like next to Texas.
Oh no,
other side, top and bottom, top and bottom of the country. Let me tell you. Oh my goodness, man.
It's a federalist system, dog. You straight up can't do that.
It's like weed is legal here in Michigan. Can I go to Texas and say no? You can't get me. You can't get me. Dana Nessel said
diplomatic immunity. Sorry, I could hit someone with my car here, and you can't get me.
You can't. Michigan's a no-fault state. You know, I'm licensed in Michigan, so that's your fault, dog. Ridiculous. And also, like, I feel like more importantly than challenging the Constitution, which, you know, that can be corny to talk about sometimes. Mm-hmm. What the fuck does Ken Paxton want with a list of every transgender youth in Texas?
Yeah. Oh, no good. Nothing good. Nefarious.
Nothing
things.
Good. What is he doing when he's literally rounding them up on a list? And this is... It's not the first time he's tried to do this. I don't know how we missed it, but
grown ass man beefing
with trans youth. Can you believe that? Can you believe that?
Beefing with like 0.5% of his population. Oh, you got better shit to do.
This guy needs to worry about his own like impeachment
gun violence.
Case.
Gun
violence.
Texas.
Oh my. He needs to worry about his own federal cases that are pending for securities fraud.
yeah, that too.
come on.
He was cleared by the Texas Senate.
Yeah, because
so.
They're, you know, the democratic process, let the voters decide.
Yeah, yeah. Even though like what, half of Republicans in the House, in Texas's House voted to impeach him. Exactly. Their Senate said, no, he's good. We're clearing
Senate
him.
Senate said, no. Oh, he's chill, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I misunderstood your game. I misunderstood.
I can't wait until he enforces sodomy laws and he's like, give me the gay sex list.
That's what he said about this. He said that's a law on the books. Or no, it was about in 2022. I don't know if we covered it. I think we did because it sounded familiar when I heard it. In 2022, Ken Paxton, through his like AG interpretation of something, made it illegal to just like, or deemed... transgender children as like a form of child abuse or some bullshit
I remember that.
And then they started investigating families who had trans youth. So, you know, again, using the power of the state to beef with a couple people, always sick when that happens.
The just following orders response is wicked.
That's what he said. He's like, it's on the book, so I will enforce it.
Historically, always, you know, looks very kindly upon people with that excuse.
Yeah, you know, when people say just following orders, it really invokes images of
loyalty.
loyalty. I don't know, like shit, maybe history's worst villain, modern history's greatest villain. But anyway, this isn't the first time that Ken Paxton has tried to gather a list of transgender youth. He also asked the Texas DMV for a list of every person who changed their gender on their license.
Wait, so can you just not transition like after you're 18 at this point in Texas?
What is going on? what is going on? And one, you know, I gotta give him props. That's a crafty way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crafty, creative way to go about making a list of minorities who live in your state that you are trying to prosecute. Mm-hmm. It's a crafty way to go about it.
What you need a list for? That's all. What nefarious evil things do you want? There. I do not have the words to describe how evil Ken Paxton is.
No, I also think it's just going back to the law that they passed in the beginning of September. Well, I guess early August or late August, but it went into effect in September, to make it by law like, okay, yeah, you were doing this thing. You were on HRT, say, or you were on puberty blockers for, I don't know, like a fucking third of your life, but now you got to get weaned off of those. I think you described it as a special kind of hell in an episode earlier.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine you are doing this thing that the medical community said 100%, this is care. This is the proper care for whatever condition you are facing right now. This is care that saves lives. And now you have to watch your body undergo this awful transformation to something that you do not fuck with and do not identify with.
Yeah.
Ken Paxton is ontologically evil. Like, I can't, bro, is the embodiment of darkness.
Yeah, no, it's forced detransition is
insane.
What it is. It's evil. And it is, from what I know, I mean, obviously I haven't experienced it, but having to go through puberty that does not align with your own sense of gender identity, your sense of who you are, is a painful thing, to say the least.
Yeah.
It's torment, right? And the fact that state officials, despite medical evidence, in spite of medical evidence, can force you to go through a puberty that's going to make your life worse is, it's just evil, right? It's horrible.
And they just get up there and lie. Yep. They get up there and lie and say that you don't know what puberty blockers are doing. Puberty blockers, they're causing this crazy harm. Yale School of Medicine published an article with, you know, their faculty at the School of Medicine, at an Ivy League School of Medicine, saying that puberty blockers are 100% reversible.
Yeah, well,
it's just how it works.
And it's like a lot of right wingers try to act as though like gender affirming care is like a mystery.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you go far enough down the path of medical transition, you like won't be able to have children, for example. It's not a mystery. They know.
Like, they are well aware of these risks before they get up.
Nobody's being tricked. Puberty blockers exist solely so that you can like go through the process in a way that is reversible, so that if you decide, you can get off puberty blockers and you know, re-engage in, I don't know, regular processes. But it's not like people are being surprised. They know what they're in for.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, this medicine is going to alter your life forever. Yeah, that's kind of the point. That's what they're going
that's
for.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
This hip replacement is going to alter my life forever. I'm going to be able to walk better.
Oh, you know, if you go through with that bottom surgery, you're not going to be able to have kids.
Yeah. Yeah, dog.
What do you mean? Okay. That's not like it's kind of.
Isn't that for me to decide?
It's like you're just. Some people. They've already done the calculations. They don't care. Like they know what they want. Why are you deciding? It's crazy. Wicked
God,
story.
Man. God.
Ken Paxton is crazy. Time to end off on some extra news tidbits.
Quick little. I'm glad you added that end one on there. I was gonna hit that a little bit.
Yeah. So a couple of news items. I guess we can start with the last one first. The Epstein names.
Huge. I got more excited the less I had read about it. Apparently,
inverse
the list.
Relationship.
So basically, what's going on is a federal judge. I think it was a federal judge, right?
Yep.
Ordered that 150 names on like that appeared throughout Epstein like depositions and trials and different names related to Epstein will finally be released. And I was like, whoa, shit, we're getting the Clintons finally.
Uh-huh, Clinton, like, Donald Trump, maybe
we
Joe
are
Biden.
Getting them. I was thinking, 150 people are going to be found who committed suicide with two shots to the head.
Back of the head, yeah.
Back 150 associates.
That's
of
what
the
I call the
family.
Clinton special, yeah.
Exactly, that's what I thought was going to go on. But apparently, when I fucking read more, it's mostly people whose names were made public in the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, people who were victims, people who weren't associated with the actual sex crimes, but had like orbited in other dealings with Epstein, so it's not like as
well. Why are you revealing victim names? I don't need to know those.
That's what I'm saying.
They should be able to live
their
lives.
They should be able to have a comfy life.
Gone through
like,
enough.
Yeah, I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I was excited. I'm hoping we get some bombshells like Donald Trump, Elon Musk, etc. Bill Clinton.
It's the black book that that is really good. It's the client list being revealed that we really want because they fucking got it. Like that's the one thing that conservatives harp on about that they're kind of right.
Yeah,
they are absolutely right. And why is the DOJ or whoever is handling this case not revealing the names of these powerful people who happen to work
in
the government?
I feel like that's a bipartisan sentiment, at least from leftists and conservatives. Like, we both want the names to be revealed. I think that they just think that Donald Trump won't appear on the list,
exactly.
Which is not like there's going to be tons of conservatives on the list, as there will be a bunch of liberals because they're all fucking demons.
The Clintons.
What level of wealth do you got to get to where it's like pedophilia? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how rich? I hope I never get that rich. That's crazy.
Wealth is a corrupting force.
Yeah, yeah. I also saw it was like 150 out of the 150 names, all but three are getting revealed or something like that. It got to be like someone high up. That was like,
it's got to be fucking Hillary, Bill, and Chelsea or some shit.
Yeah. Getting the daughter in there. Or maybe, yeah, it's got to be like, I saw some people like, it's got to be former presidents, which like maybe,
could be,
but there could
Bill.
Just be other reasons for, I don't know.
Yeah, they could just be auxiliary people in the case. Like, yeah. I don't know. It's not as exciting as it first seemed. I was kind of disappointed.
In some fun news, though, George Santos went on Z-Way's show.
Kind of gagged her.
It was, like a 20-minute episode or yeah. something like that.
I saw about like half of it. I saw the clips.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of clips of it as well. I mean, it was basically what I expected. It was a good piece of content. Yeah. I appreciated her for doing it.
Oh, 100%. Real journalism. There were conversations that came out about it, about irresponsible platforming, but
he was a congressman.
That's what I'm saying. You can't platform a sitting, he's still sitting.
Yeah.
You can't platform somebody who won a national federal election, especially during their term.
Yeah.
And who was just like the biggest figure in the news for like 3 weeks.
My position is like, okay, we know he's probably going to jail, right?
Yeah.
Like dude's pretty cooked. We have like all the documented crimes that he's committed. At the very least, election or campaign funding related crimes that he's committed. It's kind of like in Loki season one, how they were like hiding out in timelines that are about to be destroyed.
Exactly.
It's like anything that he does now, it won't matter because he's going to end up in jail.
Because he's cooked.
Yeah.
He's cooked.
Like it's like your New Year's resolution from the previous year at the end of December. It's like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're about to get a new one, but nothing matters till January 1st. So anything he does right now is going to be of no consequence because he's going to end up in jail.
Yeah. And
it's free reign.
Again, like you said, it's just silly to think that you can platform a congressman.
Yeah, especially like Z-Way. Like, she's got a specific audience.
Yeah.
She's very popular, don't get me wrong.
But it's still niche, like,
but
overall.
She's not platforming him to people that are like, you know, I might consider him for president
one
day.
It's not on NPR.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, NPR's got an audience. I probably wouldn't either. But it's not on, like, radio. It's not just, like, a TV thing. You know, it's not CNN.
Yeah, and it's weird that I didn't really hear any of this platforming nonsense when he was, like, on CNN or MSNBC or Piers Morgan Show or anything like that. It's like, he goes on Z-Way.
You put him on Z-Way, who's got a leftist audience, like, let's be real, who's got an audience that cannot be swayed by George Santos of all people, and you're going to call that irresponsible platforming? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but like, your conservative uncle is not watching Z-Way thinking that George Santos made some great points when he didn't know who these civil rights leaders were.
Well, importantly, he's not watching Z-Way because he's not listening to a black woman.
Exactly.
Like, that's just simply not going to happen. Like, you're concerned. You be fucking for real. It's silly. The platforming argument is silly.
Or like,
have
he'd
fun.
Get a couple of minutes into it and he wouldn't like the dry humor. Like, yeah. He wouldn't like the awkward situation.
My only critique would have been like, go harder on him. Because like, she had him on the back foot a couple of times, but if that's not her style, if she's just doing it for the fun, then whatever.
She didn't press as hard as like I wanted to. The one moment where I was happy and I thought she got it was when she's going through like list of things that he's done, and she mentions the I thought she mentioned the Brazil case where he was like stealing some bullshit,
check fraud.
Yeah, check fraud. And he goes, I don't do petty crimes, but it's like,
you literally did though.
Like, you literally wanted, I'm pretty sure, in Brazil.
Yeah, and there was one part she hits him with she was like, oh, you like fiction though, right?
Yeah. He just looked at her like, that was so good.
Yeah. She's got some zingers. She got some zingers in on him. He had her on the back foot a couple. It was overall entertaining. It was a good watch.
It was good. It made
I don't fault her for doing it.
Only critique could have been that she could have been a little better about not letting him get the space to gag her.
Yeah, but that's coming from fucking us.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? People that would have gone in and not focus so much on like stuff like singing Nicki Minaj.
To be fair, the only time that he got her was when she said, how do we get rid of you? And he said, stop booking me. That was a fucking bar.
He's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Or let the legal process play out. That's one way. We can interview you from a cell. You can't do any harm there. I'm a Law and Order kind of Democrat anyway.
That's what I'm saying.
Another piece of extra news is there's been a lot of news about Trump quoting Hitler. Which is true. It's real, by the way.
He said, what was it? Immigrants are poisoning the blood of this nation.
Yeah, he called leftist vermin.
Vermin?
Yeah, he used the word vermin, which is a Hitler word. There's been a lot of people coming to his defense for statements like that. But again, it's like liberals freaking out about this. I've been saying this.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I've been talking about the death of the euphemism for years now. And now people are worried about it. If it's like optically to hurt Trump as we go into this election, you're fine. You know, do whatever you got to do. But I'm just saying, like, it's nothing new. That's why I'm not surprised.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's like the common counter argument I see to this is like, okay, like whatever, like these are just like statements, like it could mean anything. He didn't necessarily know. And it's like,
words have meaning.
I don't even think it matters if he didn't know that he was quoting Hitler. Mm-hmm. He still came forth with the same sentiment that Hitler had. Dare I say that's worse? He arrived at it on his own. I independently arrived at Hitler's conclusions.
Yeah, that is worse. You're not even ripping his work. You're just him again.
Exactly. You mean that we have the conditions in this country that created him just here? And yeah. You're just following the path.
Not much better. I did see somebody on Newsmax, I think it was. He was like, oh, yeah, well, Hitler used the word chair, and I used the word chair, so does that make me Hitler? It's like, yeah, clearly, these words don't have the same, like, moral charge or political and historical meaning, like the word vermin, or I think Trump also said something like, oh, no, I think, like, Jesse Waters or maybe Sean Hannity, someone was trying to bail him out and was like, well, you're not going to abuse your power, right? And then Trump's like, only on day one.
The dictator thing, yeah, where he's like, day one dictator.
Yeah, he's like, only on day one. It's like, all right, that's not a good sign.
Like, hold on. Yeah. please, Mr. Trump.
Mr. Trump, please. Mr. Trump. The last bit of extra news I have, this isn't even really news. It's the whole narrative around the vibes-based economy. Have you been hearing this?
No.
So the argument goes, and this is like a frustration I've seen from liberals, where it's okay. Like, people still feel as though the economy isn't good. They still judge Joe Biden harshly for the state of the economy.
Yeah.
But a lot of economic indicators are looking up. You know, like GDP is looking up, unemployment's down. The rate of inflation has ceased. It's not growing at the rate that it was before. Mm-hmm. A lot of things are looking better for the economy, yet people still feel as though the economy isn't working for them, and they judge Joe Biden accordingly. And the frustration from liberals is that, oh, it must just be a vibes thing. Like, people aren't paying attention to the actual economic indicators. It's just how they feel. And my take on this is that is incredibly condescending.
Yeah, and it's also, I feel like that just kind of ignores, like, sure, yeah, maybe we're quelling inflation now, but that doesn't prices mean that it high. Wasn't going crazy for the last year. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that, like, the good milk isn't $7 right now.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, okay, the rate of inflation isn't the same that it was, right? We've gotten that under control, but a hamburger is still $17.
Yeah, the damage is done. Mm-hmm. It's just not worsening.
And I don't even blame inflation on Joe Biden, right?
Yeah.
I think it's wrong to blame Joe Biden. There's a confluence of factors that have contributed to inflation. But the thing here is that liberals will see, like, oh, economic indicators are looking much better. I would say because of policies Joe Biden has passed along with Democrats in Congress, yet people still don't feel it. And it's like, okay, maybe you'd even make the argument that, like, things are as good as they were under Donald Trump. It's like, people still couldn't make ends meet under Donald Trump.
I was going to say, this is like, I feel like we fundamentally agree, but it's an issue of framing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not telling people that's like, oh, it's just the vibes, that's why you're feeling bad, because I recognize that either way they felt bad. Mm-hmm. It's just whether or not that blame could be placed on somebody based on policies that they perceive to be doing better for them.
Yeah.
Like, Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act made people perceive that everything was going to get better. Joe Biden, I don't know, fucking being himself and having to deal yeah. with Trump's economy made people also perceive that things were worsening at a rate greater than what it actually was. That is all outside of the fact that underlying everything is a bad economy, is me spending too much on groceries.
Yeah, no, and I think there is something to the argument that the media will, anytime a Democrat's in office, the media will always frame it as though the economy is bad, right?
Yeah.
A Democrat, like, it happened under Barack Obama, happened under Bill Clinton, happening under Joe Biden. Fox News is always going to say the economy's in the shitter, crime is really bad, regardless of what the indicators actually say. That's always going to be the case. But yeah, as you say, in 2019, all the figures we cite where it's like people can't afford a $400 emergency expense, 60% of the country lives paycheck to paycheck, those are stats from like 2019.
Yeah.
People were never doing well. Maybe their perception based off media takes that they see was slightly different, but their lived experience was still the same. And especially after the pandemic, I think people have come to expect more out of government.
Yeah.
They've seen the rise, or I guess, I don't even know if I could call it a rise, the relative increase of union action, mm-hmm. and they've become more hopeful. They saw what state governments can do with unemployment checks that were very generous, that helped a lot of people. And I think now a lot of people are realizing, like, okay, well, the government did a lot of things. There's a lot of state intervention in the economy for COVID. why can't we have more?
Yeah.
And I think that's a legitimate way to feel.
Totally reasonable. You should expect a lot out of your government.
Yeah.
But also, if they want to make this vibes-based economy argument, I think there are instances where it is fundamentally true. Look at gas prices right now. Yeah. Gas prices by the stew, $2.85.
Yeah, that's sick.
That's crazy.
Dope.
That's so cool. And that's not getting coverage like how gas prices when they were $2.85 got coverage under Trump. Mm-hmm. That's where you have vibes coming in and people's perception of what's going on coming in and skewing what they think is happening with the economy. Because gas prices being high were one of the things that made people think that Joe Biden's economy was so bad in the first place. But then when they go down, nothing really happens to quell that.
I guess I reject this idea that vibes are only now just becoming a part of how people view the economy.
Vibes have always been a part of
it. It's always been about vibes, but also at the same time, it's like, yeah, some indicators are looking good. GDP, for example, unemployment, for example, but people still can't fucking afford anything.
Yeah. Because
rent is still insanely expensive. The material needs that or the material necessities that everybody needs to get by are still very expensive and take up a lot in people's budgets as their wages haven't really increased. And even if wages have increased in some capacity, people still feel the squeeze economically.
Yeah, the issue here, the critique with that argument is that what is it? Liberals are focusing on how things aren't getting as worse.
Yeah.
Things are getting worse at a slower rate, or they're maybe even stagnating, and they refuse to acknowledge that things are bad to begin with and that things had gotten bad in the first place.
Yeah, and I mean, fundamentally, to me, it just comes across as like liberals speaking down to people that are still feeling the squeeze, and it's like, don't be condescending. And I don't think it's coming from like a bad place. I don't necessarily think, except for maybe some like the centrist economists, I don't think they're being openly malicious where it's like, the uppity poors won't shut up. You know what I mean? I think a lot of them are just genuinely confused. But I think you just got to keep in mind, anytime you're thinking optics, people are going to judge their well-being based on their material based on their material security or insecurity. And even if they're doing perhaps better than they were in 2021, or better than they were in 2019, people weren't really doing that well back then either.
Yeah, and it's also like, even as somebody who fucking looks at these things every goddamn week, tries to pay attention, I'm not feeling the economy being better.
Right, no,
there's not really a feeling there except for me saving, like, I don't know, $5 right now on gas every week.
Yeah, well, and it's leftist critique, fundamentally, our economy isn't designed to make people feel good. It's designed to produce profit off the backs of the working class. But that's a broader critique liberals aren't even close to accepting. Nor do I think I could get them to accept it by the time we got a message around Joe Biden being elected again. But I just, this whole like, oh, well, it's just vibes. The working class is just, you know, they're just basing their perceptions off vibes. It's like, all right, fuck you, buddy.
I'm saying.
Vibes have always been a part of it. And if you're just going to ignore the material insecurity everyone's feeling, then you're just asking to lose. Mm-hmm. Because at least Republicans can disingenuously acknowledge it. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to solve it. But Trump is king at pretending he knows what's going on.
That's what I'm saying.
At least he was.
Trump is king at pointing out a problem that, genuinely exists and then going way off the rails with
blaming
any
immigrants.
Possible solution.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's just a thing I've been hearing, and it's a thing that I think a lot of people have failed to assess properly.
Yeah. With that, speaking while we're on the topic of Democrats, another thing that happened this week that's actually pretty huge. Joe Biden federally pardoned everyone who has been convicted of weed possession.
Yeah,
and personal use.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool, but I think it didn't apply to that many people.
It only applied to a couple people?
Because a lot of
state charges.
A lot of it's state charges that people are on, and he can't pardon people on state charges. But given, like, we're not going to pretend a president's a monarch. He can't literally do everything.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't have power over states and people that have been convicted of state crimes. So
it's still a good move.
To the
and
extent,
it's still a good signal.
Yeah, to the extent that Biden has power to do anything, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think more than anything, it's a good message to send. Like, these people should never have been in jail, should never have been prosecuted. And more than likely, their prosecutions were used as a way to just, you know, target Black Americans.
Yeah, it would be nice if there's a bit more focus on some legalization in the Senate, some federal legalization, which would then trump states' illegalization.
Well, and, that's extremely popular.
And 70, I don't know, it's about as popular, if not more popular, than abortion. And considering how that went, I think that would be some pretty good legislation to put forth.
I think
that would be something that would be great to, I don't know, help the horrible optics you found yourself in right now.
Wasn't it Florida in 22 that voted to raise wages, legalize marijuana, and elect Ron DeSantis?
Higher. Oh, I think, oh no, I'm thinking of the presidential election, but yeah, raising the minimum wage and was it legalizing marijuana got more votes than either presidential candidate.
And DeSantis won the governor race in 2022. Yeah. Like the three pillars of their election in 2024 should be legalizing marijuana because it's incredibly popular, yes, raising wages and protecting abortion. Like those are the issues that they could really, really win on.
Incredibly.
Add in other stuff, of course, but those should be the main
things. Incredibly easy. And they can do that while ranting on Kyrsten Sinema. Uh-huh. They can finally do what we told them to do in the first year of this pod, which is make fun of Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, even though Joe Manchin's not running again, right?
No, he's done.
Yeah,
he's
so that's
done.
Just going to be a Republican in West Virginia.
We just lost a seat. Like... I think a progressive is running in his stead is like the only one in the Democratic primary, but I'm not hopeful.
Damn, I hope the 15 people in West Virginia vote for him.
Yeah, well, West Virginia is like one of the worst places ever.
I think it's the poorest state in the union.
Probably relies on that federal money.
It's awful. Would have,
lazy,
you know,
conservatives
would have loved super much to get that $15 minimum wage. Would have helped the people of West Virginia, Joe Manchin's constituents,
huge,
literally so much. And he said, "Nah, I'm gonna go chill on my houseboat."
Someone needs to pull the anchor out of the houseboat. Let it drift away.
You know, maybe one of these special people could pull the anchor out.
Ooh,
one of these
so
special
true.
Patrons. Special thank you to you. Caden Kraut, Lord Tyler the Radiant, Chris the Postman, Christy Beck, 40% Spite, Dylan B., Andrew Harris, Mike Jablinski, Mattias T., Omar Zuno, Clayton LaFed, Mark Yeager, Kaz, Caleb Joy, Rich Toro, Tari, Gavin Mayer Maldonado, Hunter W., Fergalaki, Max Vezquez, Jacob Rogers, Colton Mooberry, Fixer Punk, Jim Egbers, Jeff Muzzy, Bagel Burrito, Cincy Alex, Joe Stenstrom, Adrian Sandoval, Chloe Sam 601, Colleen Cut, Veryuk, Jennifer DeVoe, Big Bird Titty, Crawfishin',
oh my God,
Benneth Bennington III, Alexia Benanti, Niche, Big Booty Beatdown, Sam Maloney, Two Headed Boy, Ben Shapiro's Boyfriend, Jonathan Cassis, Luke O'Shea, Cucker Tarlson, Danielle Jackson, The Word of Microsoft, Jennifer Signs, Aaron and His Gundam Gundams, Darth Father, Aiden Taylor, Corey Chambers, Sewer Snack, Elian, John Glover, Devin Hatchard, Retro Mondo, Meatball Minion, Emma the Dewslayer, Breezy B, Veronica, aka V, Rex Sun, Ash Smith, The Grotler, Magic Ian 95, Flower Clown, Beetlebugs, Three Crit, Murder in a Trench Coat, Lonnie Rogers, Slavic and Sapphic, Casey Lynn Kelly, Snake Eyes, In Hope of Giants, AK Gone, Aquana Don,
Zach Lantian, Info Russell, Austin Greif, Marcus Corbett, Caleb Roper, Taylor Rensock, Ishi Teddy, Cammy, Pagan Jester, Tylen Freeman, Steak Daddy, Tay Tay, Isaac Hodges, Madeline C, Pab the Pab 69, Kayla Lowe, Anna Valenik, Eduardo Diaz, Casey C, Sayesta West, August, Particular Pickman, Sir Capalot, Jeff Sines, Howard the Duck, Brennan is Egg, JR, Drew Batchilder, Froggy Gumdrop, Zen Doing Their Best, Jackie Boy, Shameless, Coherent Babbles, Nikki Nine Lives, Sasha, MJ Sharp, Michaela Muncy, The Wallace 3000, Southwest Socialism, Jared Finch, Evil Vegan, Tactile Snowflake, Son of Ander, Vanilla Bryce, Willie Swags, Chris E., and My Mom. Thank you all so much for supporting the show on Patreon.
Love hearing those new names. Really just makes my week hearing those new names every time. You know what I'm saying?
Looking forward to the award show next week.
Uh-huh.
Make sure you all cast your vote in the form that will be available on Wednesday of this week, December,
that's
I
right.
think like 27th or something like that. Make sure to cast your vote before we record that episode on probably Saturday. Whatever day is not New Year's Eve.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll figure it out when we get there, but voting will be open for a few days. Make sure you cast your vote. And, you know, we'll be saying this next episode, but thanks for sticking with us for all of 2023.
Exactly. And most importantly, have a great new year.
We love you.
Oh my gosh.
Non-parasocially.
Have a great one.